On this episode of A State of Control, it is a special one. This is our 100th episode, and we take a look back at 9 years and 100 episodes of A State of Control. We talk about why are some of the programming topics the same, what are some that we need to be talking about moving forward, and how has programming changed over the past 9 years. All that and more on A State of Control.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Extron, industry-leading technology backed by world-class support.
A State of Control.
A State of Control, episode 100, Unsung Hero. Welcome to A State of Control, an AV Nation podcast that highlights the control, programming, and automation aspects of the audiovisual industry. My name is Steve Greenblatt. I'm your host. Thanks for joining us today. So today is a special day, and we're going to have a little bit of fun. Today is our 100th episode. That means that we've been at this for quite some time, and I get to celebrate this with some real close industry friends. So I'm going to dive into that and first start off by introducing my partner who's been here with me since day one, and we've been doing this for a long time together. He is Rich Fregosa, and also known as Uncle Richie. Rich, welcome and congrats on episode 100.
Day one, episode one, all the way up to 100. Who'd have thunk? Like I said, we started from the beginning hoping that, you know, all of our loyal fans, including, like, you know, my mother would watch our show. So, no. Mellow West Coast greetings on this one. It was, it is a testament also to Steve and your persistence and staying with it, because you've been driving this thing the whole way through for 9 years. And I'm just proud to tag along with you, my friend. So I will be the McMahon to your Carson on this one happily, so. That tells you how old we are on that, right?
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't have done it without you, and appreciate you being there, always being supportive. And I will then introduce someone who is also with us on day one. Actually, two of people today have been with us from day one, and he was our first guest, and his name is Mark LaVecchia, and he's a close friend of mine as well, and he's with BMA Software Solutions. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
I appreciate it, and I'm really just very grateful that you reached out and let me take part in this, because for all the years I've been in this business, I've done a few things 100 times, and none of them need celebrating. This does, and I'm just real proud and grateful that you invited me to be here.
Well, thanks for being with us, and I can't go without introducing the person who really helped to make all of this happen. Is also a good friend and somebody who I look up to from a podcaster's perspective, and I appreciate giving us this opportunity. He is Tim Albright, and he is the founder of AV Nation as well as the CMO of CTI. Welcome, Tim, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And last but not least, another friend who I've gotten to know over the years and probably has been on the most episodes of A State of Control. We're not keeping count, but I think he may win the award for most appearances, and he's been a great contributor to us, and he is Dave Hatz from Room Ready. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Just completely honored, sort of echo Mark's thoughts, just honored to be here with this group, and just to see you know, how much has been covered over the years on State of Control, but also just, you know, where this has grown and imagining where it's going to. So just thrilled to be a part of this.
Well, thanks for joining us and for contributing over the years. We're going to really take a look back on this episode. I thought it would be a good time for us to pause and see what we've accomplished and see what's changed and see what work we have to do moving forward. We started this podcast in February of 2013, over 9 years ago and 100 episodes. And we if we look back, we even back to episode one, we're still talking about a lot of the same topics. And that's could be good or bad, depending on your perspective. And it goes to show that There's a lot to talk about. And when we first started this, we were kind of unsure if this was even going to take. So we've been talking about programming and control and been able to educate and provide a perspective on the things that we do from people who do it. So Rich, I'll let you kind of kick us off here. You know, we've seen a lot of things change, but yet we're still talking about a lot of the same things. As I mentioned, have we accomplished what we set out to accomplish, or are we still suffering from a lack of identity with regard to programming and programmers?
I think we've endured. I think that we've endured. I'd love to say that, you know, we've had this massive shift, but we were just talking earlier before we started recording that there's a lot of conversations that we still have with a lot of industry people that we had 9 years ago. The same marketing from 9 years ago is still out 9 years later. Just the product names have changed. We haven't, but the products did. And so, you know, I kind of view that as fortunately, the people who are kind of prominent in the industry from our control systems programming side, it's a little bit of a, we might know what we're talking about. As much as everybody new who comes in and says, you guys are the dinosaurs, you're not going to exist, we've got this brand new thing that's going to be, you know, I'm all for disruption, but I'm also for reading the room at times with us. And more than anything else, I think in 9 years, we've established that we're just not programmers. The day-to-day of code, that's always been the same now from 9 years ago to 25 years ago, right? It's just making a user function initiate something down the line. It's no different now than when we were soldering DB25 cables, right? The difference has been the evolution of our respective companies to being solution providers, which we've always said from the beginning, right? We always employed the software as a service model. We just didn't have a name for it 30 years ago. And I'd like to think that we've been the steady hand all the way through, saying that's great. The technology will change, we'll adapt. And I find that our segment has been the most versatile and flexible and accommodating, right? And embracing the new technology and saying, great, bring it on. I mean, we're geeks to begin with. We love this stuff. And I know personally, I've gone, you know, in the past 30 years from periods where I was super stoked and excited and great. And I went periods of years of going, I'm going to go flip burgers or do something else, right? It's just the nature of the process. And I kind of view us as, you know, there's a certain point, like with athletes, and we were talking about it, right? You know, you get to a level playing field in this industry where, you know, company A, B, C, I mean, everybody in here, if somebody said, I'm using Steve, fantastic. You're taken care of. I'm using Mark. Fantastic. I'm using Dave. Great. The difference stops being about talent and starts being about, and we were talking about earlier, about longevity, right? The length of your career, the ability to consistently day in and day out deliver. And I think that's where our segment of the industry has matured, where it's like, yeah, we've been there. We know it. And that's not disruptive in a sense, but it is productive. And, you know, that's kind of where I see that, you know, the control system side of it, we still have that, what do they call it? The imposter syndrome, right? You know, when you walk in and you worry about being those guys in the room and really showing your worth. And I'd like to think that after 9 years and 100 episodes, we've been able to put out the message that, yeah, you're good at what you do. You can be good at what you do. Follow the process, be confident and show value in who you are, because we are an important segment of the market, whether the marketing side of the industry wants to believe it or not.
I think we've been waving that flag for quite some time, and I'll kind of jump over to Mark, because Mark, you have a little bit of a different perspective. Somebody who is running a programming company, but not necessarily having to wear the hat of being a programmer, but understands the importance of what we do and can look at it too from really a sales perspective and a messaging perspective. How important is it to make sure that programmers really are highly regarded in this industry moving forward, to be able to continue to have businesses like ours?
Well, it's critical. We're not going to exist if people don't take us seriously and respect us. I think the biggest change over the last 9 years, and even longer, at least from my perspective, again, like you'd mentioned, which is a good point, I don't program, okay? I surround myself with programmers like a hole surrounds itself with a donut, okay? I've got the best guy. So in that regard, one thing that has changed has been that the number of people who realize how important we are has increased. And it has increased because the fastest way people appreciate what we do is when they don't and the job goes sideways and they're like, what am I going to do now? So for us, I've been very blessed because I can communicate that to the customers and say, you're here because this is the way you, like Rich said, you strayed from the process. You can't stray from the process. You need to stick to the process. Stick with our process. And when you get done with this project, you're going to stick the dismount. Your customers are going to be happy. You'll make money. I'll make money. And everybody will be happy. And that, to me, the number of people who have had jobs go sideways because of this, they're the ones that quickly gravitate to the value that we bring. And that number's increased quite a bit over the years.
Dave, you bring a little bit of a different perspective to us from being more on the integrator side, where you don't necessarily lead with program, or many integrators don't necessarily lead with programming, but programming is a real important part of the business. How can that be brought to light more, I guess, in terms of valuing the programmers, because they probably are more behind the scenes rather than somebody that is the highlight. Whereas when you're a programming company, this is what we have to offer.
Well, that's an awesome question because, for an integrator, it's almost like the programmer, if things go well, the programmer's not in spotlight because everything went off without a hitch. The system is easy to use. The end user is thrilled. It meets their requirements. Again, it's almost like it was so easy that it just magic just happened. It's almost, I don't want to say they devalue the work that the programmer did, but it's not in the spotlight. So did it happen? The flip side is Mark referenced. Well, if the programming or if the project went south, often the programmer is in the middle of the time slot where it went south, not necessarily at the crux of why it went south, often involved in making it correct and getting it back on track. But often the programmer comes into the limelight at that point, but there's all this friction around the project at the same time. And so it's hard almost for, I think for sometimes for the programmer to get the recognition of the fact that they're the ones with the superhero cape on that actually just saved the day and kept this train from going off the mountain. And so it's sort of this interesting dichotomy here. I think for me, having, I no longer program on a daily basis, but I have teams of people who do. And for me, I think the biggest thing I have been able to do is call attention to those on the team, not just programmers even, but those on my team who are going above and beyond, making sure at least inside the company and among their peers, their heroic efforts are recognized and appreciated. And that as as leadership and an integrator, that I'm hearing where things went off the rails so that I can correct and make changes, whether it's communication with our end users or communication and processes internally, so that I'm setting up the programmer to not have to have that same stress, that same fire, time and time again. For me, that I think, you know, when we look at the persona of a programmer, often many are introverts, not all, but many. And so I've actually found a lot of them don't want the spotlight on them. You know, it's, you know, but giving a bit of praise publicly is really important still, but more solving the challenges that lead them to stress, that put them out of their comfort zone, that make them be heroes when they were already going to be a hero. Now we, you know, we just made it, ratcheted it up what we're asking of them. If I can solve for some of that, I've actually found that to be a really big reward to my team. And at the same time gets perceived as recognition to them because we are learning, we're hearing, we're recognizing them.
I think we're very fortunate to have somebody like you in a leadership role who can appreciate programming because that doesn't always happen to be the case. And it's what you're saying, I think, is very valuable to those who are in the trenches. And I think you hit on a lot of important points there. Tim, I know that you've been in a lot of different roles throughout your career, one of which was programming back in the day, but you've always had a love for it. And this is why we started this podcast and wanted to bring this to light. What more can we do? Looking at it from maybe a media perspective, or, you know, as Dave said, you know, programmers are quiet and they don't necessarily like the spotlight, but what more can we do to bring awareness to this topic and to what the industry needs to do to appreciate programming? So we're not talking about how to squash it.
Well, you're very kind to say that I used to do programming because I think everybody except for LaVecchia has gotten crazed phone calls from me on this panel at one point in time. And I will point out that that Uncle Richie did not say, "Oh, you've got Tim, you're fine," in his introduction. And really quickly, the reason we started this, yes, I have a love for programming. It is still my favorite part of the industry. I think it is just wicked cool, and I do wish to God that I was better at it than I am. But quite frankly, I started it because you asked, right? You were one of the first people as once we started AV Week, we're like, hey, this is a segment of the industry that we should take a look at, right? Greenblatt hit me up and said, this is something that obviously he's passionate about, I'm passionate about. I had gotten to know Uncle Richie at that point. Obviously, he's passionate about it. So that, I mean, it was really just kind of taking, you know, existing passions that you guys had, and I appreciate that. And I'm very humbled to be here after 100 episodes, so thank you. Some of it is telling those stories, right? Is how we bring awareness. And yes, Hattie is right. The vast majority of programmers are some level of introverts, right? But one of the stories that I wish that we would tell more and better is, I'm not going to say heroism, but the dramatic work that the programming community did in this industry the last 2 years. And the reason I say that is through the pandemic and through the chip shortages, and I'm not going to call out any necessarily direct manufacturer's name here, but there's a number of folks that have put dealers and have put, you know, programmers in a bad spot for a minute because you just didn't have the product to ship, right? And so the programming community went to work and said, okay, well, if I can't get A, what about B? If I can't get B, what about C? Okay, we can get C. But guess what? C is a brand new language that I've never touched, or I haven't touched in 10 years. But this is why I love control and programming. I haven't touched it in 10 years, but it's still computer language, right? I can still make a translation. So these folks would stay up all hours of the night, work weekends, and say, well, I can get C, and we've got to make a translation module, or I've got to develop this, or I've got, and across the board. At least the ones that I know here in the US, there's a couple of programmers I know abroad, they've done this as well, but they have really made the translations and quite frankly, put the integration back in integrators and integrated this disparate stack of product to get clients solutions, right? And I think that is a story that I wish that we would tell more often and louder.
So I really like that, Tim, that, you know, thinking of us as heroes, I think is something that's new to programmers, but it's not, it's not unjust. So I think if we thought of ourselves more in that regard and got the industry realize that there'd be make life a lot better. So, Rich, we'll kind of bounce over to you and moving forward, what do you think that we need to be talking about in order to make what we do more sustainable, pave the path for the new blood in the industry, make this a career that is going to be more desirable? And, you know, you and I have mentioned several times that we're kind of on the back end of our careers, and it's time to pass the baton, in the future. So what are some things that we need to be doing, and you know, how can podcasts and other media outlets help with that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's, you know, you all know my wife, and that she's an education and a consultant and focuses on career technical education.
And she's awesome.
Amazing. Brilliant. Right. You know, as my son is getting older, he's getting to the age right now when I started, you know, picking up like my first Atari with the 16K RAM cartridge and, you know, programming blackjack games. And he's getting to that age where, you know, he's got a Raspberry Pi and he's doing Arduino, and he's, you know, he spent the summer doing engineering projects, you know, and coding, and then got to sit with him and, you know, go through his code and like, here's what happened in the process. And this next iteration of control systems programming is finally going to be the closest to what we've always been accused of not being real software developers. HTML5, right? You know, it's a mobile world. 9 years ago, you know, we would have the conversations that I would sit with manufacturers and, you know, I'd hold up an iPhone or an iPad and going, this is going to change things, and would get the pushback. It'll never happen. You need this. I rest my case, right? This next iteration, you know, and I've said it from the beginning, the mobile world will continue to transform how we interact in spaces. The pandemic and no-touch technology and it becoming viable. I was just commissioning something yesterday, and I met with the IT managers, and I got no pushback on remote diagnostics, because finally, 2 years later, we had the conversation going, look, other than SEC rules, HIPAA rules, you know, the government rule, I'm like, in instances other than that, where there's still a very specific hard and fast rules, they are now open and understand the relevance and the immediacy and the satisfaction of being able to open up their world for programmers to help, right? You know, I mean, 30 years ago, we were programming over fax lines. Mark, you know, Levecchia remembers this. We used to laugh on the calls, and, you know, and I would still collaborate with these guys, and back when you're on Crestron West, right? You know, it'd be running around the house. Nobody pick up the phone. We're dialing in. And now we're rolling out, and, you know, I've got 50 remote sites all available within an instant, literally from my phone, that if something's going on, we can go in, we can check. And what this tails into is that it allows our industry to focus on that service as a software, you know, or software as a service, but to be an integral part of the team, to be that asset to the IT team, because we're moving away from the operations team, and we're focusing in really closely now with the IT. And I remember Mark and Steve, you know, hey, they've got a show with, you know, tech managers and IT managers, and, you know, the importance of it. And that was what, 5 years ago, that show started. And now, you know, of course, it took a worldwide pandemic to drive the message home. But we're seeing that now. And so where it ties into this new generation is that they're going to be able to bring skills and an approach to the industry, because they don't have to physically be there with a laptop on a bucket, you know, on a paint bucket, typing away and plugging it in and yelling over, did the projector turn on? Is it on? Is it off? And we're at the point now where we can open it up. We can approach projects from a collaborative standpoint with the IT people, with the UI designer, with somebody who is specifically working on, you know, SSH keys. You know, you've got a guy who can do that and can work with the encryption. And that may be all that they need to worry about. And then somebody else can work on the AV side and the links in between. And so we're getting to the point where the tools, we're finally having access to the tools that we wished we had years ago. You know, people still ask me, it's like, what I do? I'm like, and I tell them, and I'm like, and I can do this now with a $79 box that quite literally in 1995 cost $50,000 to develop. And we made one, right? And that is where the market is going. And so, you know, we haven't found a way to tap into that labor pool. That's the part that concerns me. We haven't found a way to make that exciting for the talent pool that's out there. But every time I do run across a junior person, because that's my favorite part when I hit a job site, right? I'm like, find your greenest guy. Just give them to me, right? Just give them to me, right? Because we're going to walk them through and teach them. And we've always had the talk about the tribal knowledge and communal knowledge, right? And reach one, teach one. And that's the part that is the double-edged part of the sword, right? Because the tech industry has evolved so much and there's a lot of money in the tech industry just by the nature of it. We have to find compelling ways to also tap into our rock and roll roots. And I think we forget that at sometimes because we're older, right? We're the gray hairs now, right? And it's hard to explain to these guys, no, you know, when I was in my 20s, it was rock and roll and it was a blast and we did all these crazy things, and now we can look back at it. And it's a hard discussion to not live in your glory days and to be able to inspire. And so for me, that's the riddle, right? How do we inspire? How do we reach out? Because the industry is still going to need them. And I'd like to see the groundswell of smaller companies be able to do that and support it, because the smaller companies are able to bring something to projects that, you know, a nationwide organization or an international organization can't necessarily do. And I think that there's still a niche and a need for it. You can have both. I don't want to see, like I said, the little rock and roll guys, you know, fade out. I'd like to see them come up and find a way to inspire them.
I would say that a lot of what we do, a lot of people are jealous of that. It's the fun part of the industry and that we have fun doing it. And I hope that continues. I want to touch on something, Dave, that Rich said about, you know, the software development side. That's obviously near and dear to my heart. And, but I think we have some things to learn there, because we don't always come at AV programming, and our industry has not really been thought of as to software development, as Rich mentioned, but, What are some ways that we can up our game when it comes to that? And is it something that also is going to be something internal that nobody's going to know about, or are there some ways that we can make that more evident? And what I'm referring to is, you know, the whole idea of doing sprints and scrums and all these, you know, project terms and true software development approach to things that our industry, it's kind of foreign, and or it's an outside concept.
That's a big part of the riddle that Rich was talking about, quite honestly. I love the concept of collaboration in our projects. Through my career, a large portion of the projects that I worked on were, I was the guy. There was an engineer who designed it. There was, you know, maybe someone else doing some audio DSP work, but a lot of times I would do that. But I was the guy. I did the front end design. I would package it up, send it to the customer for approval, ideate back and forth with them, come back, find time to write the code before I got to a site, go out on site, sit on that bucket and behind the rack, bring the system to life, deal with the changes, certify it, likely train the end user before I quick ran out the door. To get a flight or to drive home, and rinse and repeat. And on, you know, there's one mindset that says, that's the most efficient way to do a project with a team, is for one person, especially on smaller projects, for one person to just own it all, because you don't have to do the same level of communication and collaboration that's needed if you had multiple people participating in that. Now, I would challenge, though, that to be successful in the future here, we have to adopt a better team approach on our projects. As we're talking new skill sets, that's going to be what continues to emphasize this in my mind, because to find someone who is really good at HTML5, really good at pick your software development language, and in fact, pick 5 or 10 of them, because you need to support all the product lines, especially in the age of supply chain issues. Find somebody who is really proficient, not just getting by, but really proficient in all of those. Oh, and has an understanding of the AV system design methodology. What are they actually bringing to life? How does the system actually work? That's a unicorn. And they do exist out there. But they're few and far between. And frankly, when you find them, good luck affording them. And so for the industry to continue to evolve, we need to embrace the fact that there are individuals who singularly are really good at pieces of that. And if we bring them together, we balance standardization with the constant need for some minor customization, minor tweaks. If we find the right balance there, we bring minds who all do what they do really well and come together and really, sing in harmony. You're going to come out the other side with the ability to stay flexible with what product is requiring, what industry trends are driving, what customers are asking. You're going to stay relevant in innovating and pushing new ideas out and just dreaming up new ways to bridge things that nobody's ever thought before. And you're going to stay relevant even when, I come from the commercial side. So everything is Teams rooms, Zoom rooms, WebEx rooms, but there's still the opportunity for extensibility, even in those rooms. And that's what we've always done. Back to the core, back to what we were talking about, you guys were talking on episode one about that, bringing disparate things together and creating an experience. So back, we said before, so the programmer is the unsung hero behind the scenes because everything just works. That comes from a team approach. And I think we've got a big opportunity, because the other thing you can do there is now you can bring someone in who frankly doesn't even know what they're in for. Heck, I bet if we raise hands, that's how we all got into this. Pick your path in, but none of us knew what we were getting in for. And so bring a front-end web developer who is hungry and shows the aptitude to want to learn new things. Bring them in to start designing UIs for control systems. Let them get the bug of the satisfaction that comes from seeing the whole thing to come together, and make sure that they see that finished product and really experience it. And you've just found a way to bridge the talent gap, the need to stay relevant, and what our customers are asking for. If only it were that simple. But to me, that's a big part of it.
Mark, I know what Dave said, I think, is extremely relevant, and again goes to show the continuity between what we first started talking about and where we are today. And the reason why companies like yours and mine exist was to fill a gap and fill a need and be that specialist and that expert. Do we see that continuing in the same way, or do you see there being slicing that a little bit thinner, as Dave mentioned, and being even more of a specialist and doubling down on certain skills rather than being a generalist? So what I'm referring to is maybe just doing the front end or the back end or specific type of technology within a project.
I think if the supply chain issue has taught us anything, is we better be ready to adapt. And that means that we can't just expect that what we're doing is what we're going to continue to do. We are making Frankenstein systems right now that are outside of our purview. I not to get too detailed, but I'm working on a project right now that has a Logitech tap touch panel talking to an Extron box that's communicating to a Crestron processor, because that's what they have. The only thing missing are a couple of thumbtacks sticking out of the side of the neck of this thing, you know. So we've really learned to have to be able to adapt and to get up to speed on all of the different things that are available to us out there. And maybe we're not that good at HTML5, but people are asking for it, so we need to be ready for it. There's a lot of that that's happening in front of us right now that we have to adapt in real time. We just have to, whether we like it or not. And some of us took the time during the downtime with COVID and the supply chain issues to train, to get up to speed, to learn other talents that we are going to be asked about and brought to. And that's really helped us quite a bit. But we stick to one plan, which is hit the ball that's in front of us, do our best to provide the solutions that our customers are bringing to us now. It used to be we would bring it to them, but they'd come in and they'd say, these are all the pieces I have. How do I make this work? Because this customer needs this room up and going, and we need to have that happen now. And we've been able to shimmy around and move in that regard in real time, which is a bigger challenge than anything we've ever had to do. I will say, adding on though, that the one benefit for us that we have seen is the integrators have figured out that we know how to talk to the IT people. And that's really helped save us a lot, and the integrators a lot, because they just can't. They can to a degree, but not all of them. And so they'll hit that wall and they'll turn to us and say, can I bring you in here now? So we're into avenues and into places now that we weren't allowed before or relied on before. So what we've done in the last 9 years to me is that we're still providing solutions. It's just the solutions we're providing are different. And I think Richie hit the nail on the head. The new group coming in is going to be better served to adapt to what our customers are asking for without being tied to a specific software language. You had to know Simple Windows. That was just it. If you don't know that, you're just never going to figure it out. We're figuring out a way ways around that. And that's been a really important part of what we're seeing moving forward.
I think that makes sense, which really comes down to the fact that, you know, like you said before, process, but also scope of work and being able to map out a solution, which we've talked about quite a bit on the show. Tim, as we're rounding up and finishing up this milestone episode, I'll let you kind of leave us with some thoughts and some ideas in terms of what you think we should be talking about in the future, or what would be, what are some gaps that the programming world needs to be tackling in order to demonstrate our value and continue to persevere?
Some of it's the same gaps that the AV industry has as a whole, and that's the farm team, right? And Richie talked about that a little bit. Is getting folks and getting young people excited, right? Is grab them before Silicon Valley gets them, grab them before maybe another company gets them, and get them excited about, you know, yes, this is still programming, right? And you know, all of you guys have talked about HTML5 and internet-based protocols, and the ability to control things remotely is increasingly important. And the fact that we have moved beyond a DB9 and arguing about which pen is hot is the fact that, you know, we are primarily controlling things over network. And that has led this industry and this part of the industry to really hone in on the various languages and the various protocols, but also gives us a good opportunity if we'll take it, right? If we'll look beyond ourselves and say, well, this is the way we did it, so this is always the way we're going to. No, absolutely not, right? Go out and find, you know, your local high school's, you know, Arduino or Raspberry Pi group. And introduce them to not just being able to do things, you know, through these little devices, but also, you know what, they can launch the space shuttle with what they're doing. And as long as we get them connected to the right group.
I think that's a good place for us to wrap this one up, and I'm sure we could talk for hours more, and we will continue and stay tuned for some more important episodes that are going to cover a lot of the follow-up topics that we discussed today. Thank you guys so much. This was an important episode and something that was really valuable to Rich and me, and wanted to recognize you guys for being a part of it. Dave Hatz from Room Ready, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about your company?
Best place to find me is LinkedIn. Certainly find Room Ready on all the socials, our website, roomready.com.
Thank you. Mark LaVecchia from BMA Software Solutions. How can people get in touch with you and learn more about your company?
Same way as always. Open up the window and yell, I need you, and I'll be there for you. Otherwise, you can go to bmasoftwaresolutions.com.
And Tim Albright, both from AV Nation as well as CTI, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about both AV Nation and CTI?
You don't. It's just not even. You don't follow me on the Twitters, because I thought for a moment I was going to, my beloved Bears were going to have a better record than the hapless Green Bay Packers, but of course they won't. Good Lord.
Well, if you had Baker Mayfield, this would have been a different story for you.
Don't Baker Mayfield me. For CTI, go to CTI.com. For AV Nation, I'll let you do that. AVNation.tv. Socials and all that jazz.
Thanks. And thanks for helping to make this happen and really, putting AV Nation on the map and giving us this platform to be able to have this podcast. Rich, any reflections on 100, and how can people get in touch with you? And looking forward to 100 more with you.
Well, I was about to say 9 years in, and I guess in 2031, if there's a whole lot more salt in here than pepper. It's a testament to everybody here that, we're here 9 years later, that we still love what we do in our own ways. And I still do. And, I think I went through that period of time where I think we all reached that burnout phase, and you have to find new ways to inspire yourself. And as we've all gotten older and we've had different challenges that have kind of given us a renewed lens, I think. I know for me the last year, it's given me an opportunity to kind of look at my whys, and I'm glad that part of my whys include all of you. And that's pretty cool. And so, just sorry, man, it's the West Coast vibe. It's pretty cool. And, thank you, Steve, for the opportunity, and Tim, and it's a blast. I mean, I love what I do. I get to hang out with my friends. And not many people get to say that when it comes to their work, right? I get to hang out with my friends. That's a pretty good gig. And so thank you, all of you, because you've all helped make me who I am as well.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate that. And if you need to get in touch with Rich, you can Google him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And yeah, you forgot to design on the Twitters. But most importantly, find me on avnation.tv and our suite of shows and all the verticals that we offer.
So just to take a moment, I am just piggybacking on what Rich said, and I had this written down in my notes to talk about. If it wasn't for things like this, if it wasn't for community, I think that programmers would really have had a tough time making it to where we have over the last 25, 30 years. And so I really value that. And some of my closest friends are in this industry, and some of them are here today on the show, and I really value that. And I think that programmers need to rely on each other, and I hope that we've been able to make be a focal point for that, and be a place that people can express their experiences and share their perspectives and help us to move this industry forward, because we're an important part of it. And like Rich said, it's really great to have each other. And I don't think that any of us, to Dave's point earlier, knows anywhere near everything that we need to know to be successful. But we have friends to get us there. And Tim mentioned that as well. So thank you guys. Thank you listeners for being a part of the show. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk to you each month. And we look forward to continuing that. For me, you can reach me at Steve Greenblatt on social media, my company Control Concepts at controlconcepts.net. I also have a little fun project that I've been doing with James King, and we have a podcast called Ask the Programmer, and that's a little bit of piggybacking on the momentum we have built here, and talking more about the different topics and different questions about programming. So if you would be so kind to tune into that, you could hear some more of these discussions. But for AV Nation, you can find out more about this show as well as all the other shows at avnation.tv. I highly recommend tuning in to many of those shows, not just the ones that you might mostly gravitate to, because I think you can learn a lot from AV Week, Resi Week, EdTech, AV Profession. They're all on my in my queue every month. So please check those out. And please also just share some feedback, share this episode, let us know your favorite episode and what you want to hear more about. And we really, it would mean a lot to hear from you. And we've been getting to meet more listeners over the years. So the more the merrier. So thank you again. And thank you for being a part of our 100th episode. And this has been A State of Control.